A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Dave and the Genevieve. We just heard Tim talking about that officer-involved shooting, and we're going to go more in depth right now with KSL legal analyst Greg Skordas. According to the Sandy Police Department, Sergeant Greg Moffitt, speaking to KSL 5 TV, they said a 33-year-old man, they were called to the scene over the weekend, apparently having some sort of a mental health crisis, possibly suicidal.
Something took place where the subject presented an immediate threat to our officer, and unfortunately those actions were met with deadly force from our officer, who discharged his firearm and hitting the subject, who was pronounced deceased at the scene.
And I think this brings up a conversation that we've been struggling with really as a nation right now, is trying to figure out how to best handle folks that are going through a mental health crisis. If they are possibly suicidal, you know, what is the best way to treat that individual? And the Salt Lake Police Department has employed several full-time mental health professionals to try to address some of these issues. Now, that's not every police department. Not every police department has that kind of resource available. You know, Salt Lake Police Department is extremely large, so not surprising that they have more resources. I don't know what Sandy has.
Yeah, Greg Skordas, our KSL legal analyst. Good morning. This is, you know, there are many questions that are unanswered at this point. I did see video. KSL 5 TV had video, looked like from a witness from a distance. And I could only see one police officer in that video. I might have missed other officers on scene. But why don't you help walk us through, from your perspective, how police should be responding to, or police departments should be responding to, a mental health crisis?
Well, I mean, that's a really difficult question, yeah. Debbie, and one that we all need to address better. And by the way, Sandy Police Department is a fairly good-sized police department, as Utah agencies go. They're very well-trained. And we're doing more and more, it seems like, in this country to deal with police response to the mentally ill, police response to, for example, difficult domestic violence situations and things like that, drug reactions. And that's sort of what police reform has all been about over the last couple of years. But the Sandy sergeant that you quoted here uses the words immediate threat several times, which is sort of buzzwords, I think, for him to justify the officer's use of deadly force at that time, notwithstanding the potential mental illness of the victim.
Greg Skordas is our KSL legal analyst. Now, Greg, I was reminded recently of one of those situations where police responded to a call, but a healthcare professional came along with the officers, and as they were interacting with the individual, the person in crisis reaches for a gun. The police officer literally has to shove the mental health care worker out of the way to protect them. I mean, this is where I look at it and I say, I understand what we're trying to do, but I am also concerned about bringing civilians or bringing people that are not law enforcement into these situations that can be extremely dynamic and extremely dangerous.
And you're exactly right, Dave. And it's also a matter of resources. It's really hard to have mental health professionals available and at the ready when police are on these situations. I mean, even this one, if by all accounts, it happened very quickly. It wasn't really something that was expected. And although Sandy City probably has mental health coordinators and mental health people that can help their law enforcement, there may not have been that availability, both with respect to the timing of it all and just the fact that it happened so quickly. I don't know. Right now, we sort of have to give the police the benefit of the doubt until the investigation is finished. But something happened that this agency feels their officer was justified in using deadly force.
We're talking live right now to KSL legal analyst Greg Skordas. You often hear him at night from 7 to 9 at KSL at Night, one of our newer shows we're very, very proud of. And Greg, we appreciate you always be your willingness to jump into these conversations a little earlier in the day. And you, when you talk about resources being available or at the ready for a mental health counselor to be on a ride along with a police officer or at the station at 1 o'clock in the morning, which is when close to the time that this officer involved shooting happened this weekend in Sandy, that just does not seem realistic given the just given the finite resources for mental health professionals that we experiencing on a day-to-day basis, just trying to get into an appointment ourselves. So I can see your point that maybe they weren't available at that time if they do have a mental health counselor on staff.
Yeah. And that the same probably would have been true for even some of our larger agencies. I mean, they're just not readily available all the time. I mean, they're certainly available telephonically, I suppose, to law enforcement, but that may not have been a realistic mm-hmm. possibility or availability for this officer to utilize at the time. And we don't know really what happened that spooked the officer and made him or her feel that the immediate threat was there and that the use of force was justified. But certainly there's going to be a lot of investigation that goes on by the county attorney's office.
And practically speaking, I don't think most of us understand how many phone calls police get and how many times they go out and get dispatched on a nightly basis. I mean, this is an 8-10 hour shift, and sometimes they don't even have time to grab lunch. They're just going from call to call to call to call.
Yeah, and a lot of people don't realize what this does to the officer. I mean, a lot of people think, oh, it's a use of force and somebody was killed. But these officers, and Debbie understands this as well as anybody, really suffer long-term consequences from these things. Because like you say, Dave, they're on the ready, but sometimes, they leave their house, they have their dinner, whatever, and all of a sudden they're involved in a situation that you and I couldn't even begin to understand how to deal with and pull a weapon.
Greg, before we let you go, by the way, this is Greg Skordas. We're speaking to him about an officer-involved shooting that happened in Sandy over the weekend. It was about 1 o'clock in the morning. The 33-year-old man dead in that officer-involved shooting. Greg, I want to talk to it from the family's perspective, though. If they did call and they were looking for help, with a mental health crisis, often families don't know where to turn. Maybe they've turned other places and the issue has not, resolved itself. And so they turn to the police department and now they have, a brother or a son or nephew who's dead. And I do worry that when these situations are not de-escalated, where somebody can get into mental health therapy, that, when somebody ends up dead, it just sends a message to other families that they get concerned that, if they call cops, is that what's going to happen to their loved one?
You're exactly right. And I think that the nature of the call will certainly be scrutinized, Debbie. And in fact, if the call did come in that this young man was mentally ill and had some serious issues, you would have expected that Sandy City, that the responding officers would have taken that into account when they confronted him. And we don't know what the call was, how it first came out, or what the immediate threat was. But certainly, if police were alerted that this was a mental health crisis, you would have expected them to take that into account before they did what they did.
Greg Skordas, thank you for joining us, KSL legal analyst.
I know this is a story that we will be tracking throughout the day, not only on Maria's new newscast, but as well later in the day from 3 to 7 with Jeff Kaplan as we learn more details with our team of reporters and producers who are checking into this as more information comes to light on what the nature of the call was, what this individual was doing at the time that concerned the officer enough to fear for his life and pull the trigger. So many more questions our team has recovered throughout the day. Straight ahead, we're going to go right on the money about the number one reasons couples fight. It's not the in-laws, Dave.
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.